Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, okay, so, it's the official launch of the Horn 2015. Yeah, really. It's the second day of January 2015. This is the first live program of the new year. I am happily unhungover. I, you know, nothing New Year's Eve, nothing New Year's. Just another day. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Randy being the first past the post. With as he is every month, with a contribution getting us started. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Much obliged. Yeah, I don't. I saw evidence that there were some folks out there doing New Year's Eve kind of fun stuff, and I hope you all enjoyed yourselves immensely. It was pretty quiet around here. Sort of saved all my excitement for last night and watched I watched a very gratifying football game. Yes, don't tune away just because I say the word football. Dadgummit, you know, we'll be back and talking about, you know, opera or figure skating in a minute. Just settle down. Had a very gratifying time watching Oregon just stomp the beat jabbers out of Florida State. Been waiting all year for that team to get exposed for, you know, the not great team that they were. And Oregon did a number. I mean, it was kind of sad. At one point, Kirk Herbstreit said, "You know what? Florida State's just quit." And there was really real amazement in his voice. Then, of course, I watched the Alabama and Ohio State game, which did not end the way I wanted, obviously. But that's okay. I had a bad feeling about the Bama game from the very beginning when the kick returner just kind of let the ball lay there in the end zone, like, you know, oh, it's not, yeah, it's just going to lay there. It's a touchback. No. You have to down the ball, son. You know? I don't know. Just seemed like they didn't bring their game. And so, you know, Ohio State goes on to play Oregon, and for the next week, I'm an Oregon fan. But I tell you what, that two games under his belt, third-string quarterback for Ohio State, Cardale Jones, that young man is a hoss. I sat there watching and I thought, you know what? Bear Bryant is spinning the sides of his grave smooth at all the arm tackling. Oh, it was pitiful. It was pitiful. But anyway, we had our Hoppin' John and some corned beef and cabbage and, you know, all for luck and everything. I think I finally figured out why they sell the corned beef all, because that stuff is so pumped up with water that when you're done dealing with it, it's about, I mean, you can buy one of those great big honkers, you know, I mean, it looks like a big hunk of meat, and by the time you're done with it, it's about the size of a hamburger patty. It's about the size of the corned beef you get in a can from, like, you know, Argentina or China. And, you know, the stuff from China might or might not be corned beef. Who knows? But anyway, it was a nice time. And got up this morning and raring to go and waiting for 6 o'clock Eastern time to roll around so that we could get together again and get 2015 started. And I think it is more than fitting that we're going to start 2015 with a Friday on the front porch because, yes, not only is it the second day of January 2015, it's also Friday, which means we will have our extraordinary, ordinary roundtable here in about 55 minutes or so and get off to a rocking and rolling and roaring good start. Randy noting by email, New Year's Eve, I watched New Year's Rockin' Eve on ABC, but they didn't do a very good job of televising the ball drop. New York City spends all that money, Randy says, on the crystal ball, and then you don't get to see it. I had, through the miracle of the Internet, I was watching Chicken Noodle News, where Anderson Cooper, and I don't know, is it tradition at CNN that all of their reporters just get to give up all pretense of any credibility whatsoever? Yeah, let's see. Kathy Griffin took red and blue chalk and chalked Anderson Cooper's hair. Yeah, that was fun. And what else? Don Lemon. Don planes in dope-smoking black holes from North Korea Lemon, apparently with no irony whatsoever, put on a... He was in New Orleans and put on a necklace of really big beads. Or another word. Anyway. Yeah. One thing was interesting. For the first time in my life, and anybody, say, younger than 53, there was a live report on American television of New Year's Eve at the Tropicana in Havana. I never know whether to pronounce it as a B or a V, so I just kind of blow past it. Havana. All right. So I thought that was kind of neat. Kudos to Auburn and Wisconsin, who put on a heck of a football game yesterday. And what a joy it was to see the battling Baptists of Baylor, who complained so loudly that they deserved to be in the playoffs, lose in the final seconds against Michigan State. It was a joy. Yeah, it inspired me to... tweet, pray louder, Baylor Baptists. Your God can't hear you. So all in all, a fairly quiet time, and as the punchline to the old joke goes, coffee breaks over. Back on your heads. So where do we start? Hey, okay, so if you've ever worked in like a fairly serious kitchen, you know that there's a concept of hold for well done. When the chef goes through and looks at all the cuts of steak that she's gotten in, she takes the ribiest, shabbiest, most miserable looking, and those are hold for well done, because you know when you order a steak well done, it's pretty much not, you know, it could be a cobbler's half sole to somebody's shoe. It's going to be well done. So what? And so I saw this come out over the last couple of days, and of course, being Christmas and New Year's do this to me and have since I was little, just mess up where my week is. This is in fact Friday on the front porch, but I spent all day yesterday thinking today was going to be Moran Monday. And then I went and realized, no, it's not. And so I was going to sit on this story, hold for Moran Monday, and hold for well done. But then I realized, yeah, today's Friday, and it's Friday on the front porch. And besides, we've grandmothered her out of Moran Monday. because if we let her compete, she'd just win every week. And where's the fun in that? It's like, you know, Bama needs to lose once in a while just so the rest of the college football world won't feel superfluous. Oh, by the way, I need to mention some things. I mentioned earlier, thanks very kindly to Randy for being first past the post on getting us started on 2015 fundraising. I also need to thank Reinhard, who provided a Have a Show on Me. Thank you very kindly, Reinhard. That's very, very kind and very, very helpful. So that, you know, the first program of the year is always Shirley's, the first program of every month is always Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And being as how Wisconsin won yesterday in overtime against Auburn, and I loved that. Oh, I loved that. One, I like Wisconsin, and two, I'm an Alabama fan, so it worked out nicely. Two, but anyway, so we begin this evening's program with both a Have a Show on Me via Reinhard and the added bonus of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. And you know how Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge always works. That means that people who respond up to $150 get their money doubled via Shirley. And it is a huge help to have that every month. And thank you very kindly to Shirley, and thank you very kindly to everybody who jumps in to get the month started right. So here's the deal. Thanks to Peter, I got a note specifically from Peter reminding me, saying that there was $20 going in the mail, and that he hoped that it would be able to be matched in the opening month's challenge, and it is. Peter and Kate got us started on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, because Kate also knows Shirley's waiting there at the first of every month with the challenge. And so Peter and Kate, and I want to make sure that I get this all right. Hang on. Here we go. This is what comes of not too many plates spinning in the air. Yes, Peter and Kate and Albert. Thank you all very kindly. What the upshot of that is that we only have $100 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, because Peter and Albert and Kate got their funds doubled. Isn't that great? So there we go. 10 at 10, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 5 at 20. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we will have met Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge to put us in a good start for the beginning, yea verily, of 2015. And a reminder that, like I said, in about 45 minutes, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, capably moderated by Sparky. And if you'd like to be a participant in that, well, send a contact request on Skype. Skype is incredibly easy. If you'd like to be part of the roundtable, we had a real rousing one going New Year's Eve, Wednesday. If you'd like to be a part of the roundtable, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you set up, and you'll be part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable that is Friday on the front porch on the Horn. We will, of course, have the Gizmo line open as well, 304-663-4676, 304-663, and that spells Horn. Ain't it clever? Yes, absolutely. So we've got that bit of business taken care of. Hallelujah. Thank you very kindly to our buddy the Angry Indian for doing his part so frequently and so well to tweet out suggestions that people listen to and participate in the program. We welcome callers from all over. But anyway, I mentioned earlier, you know, hold for well done, hold for more on Monday. And then I realized it was Friday on the front porch, and it didn't. That meant I didn't have to worry about the grandfathering issue. We're talking, of course, by her about Caribou Barbie, the half-baked Alaskan, Godzilla from Wasilla, Sarah Palin. So she was a tweeting out and Facebooking out holiday greetings. When she decided to send out a photo from the cozy, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian home of Shea Palin. She wrote on her Facebook page, "May 2015 see every stumbling block turned in..." Where's Erin Nanasi when I need her? "May 2015 see every stumbling block turned into a stepping stone on the path forward. Trig just reminded me he determined to help wash dishes with an oblivious mama." Moment of truth. Maybe 2015 is beginning with one of those searching inventories right there, Sarah. "An oblivious mama not acknowledging his signs for up found me in a lazy dog blocking his way. He made his stepping stone," because see, every stumbling block's going to be a stepping stone in 2015. The only problem is, the stepping stone that he made, and young Trigg is, of course, a Down syndrome child, and there will be no jokes here. But little Trigg has Downs. And I'm sure he manifested no ill will when he did this, but he's also six. And, you know, it's been a while since we had any six-year-olds around. I mean, well, okay, I got six-year-old grandchildren, but how much does a six-year-old weigh? Because when Caribou Barbie said that Trigg made his stepping stone, what she means is that Trigg just stepped right up and stood on the family's, I can only imagine, long-suffering Labrador Retriever. Now, we had a Labrador Retriever here for a lot of years. She was a part of the family and helped raise the youngins. Her name was Miranda. I named her after the character from The Tempest, who said, "Oh, what a marvel," is that it? "Man is." Because Miranda means miraculous to see. Right. Anyway, I don't know what I imagine the Palin family dog's name is just, you know, Dog. and the photograph that was there, proudly posted for the world to see, and which, in fact, garnered about 50,000 likes. That means there's 50,000 birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger eater, bircher, libertarian, repiglickins out there who think it's great when little children are allowed to stand on the rib cages of dogs. No, really. Sarah Palin referred to the dog as being lazy.
Yeah, lazy dog. He wasn't up praising Jesus like he's supposed to.
Good God. Do you suppose there's any chance that maybe Mama Grizzly would have said something like,
"Now, Trig, honey, don't stand on the lazy dog."
Well, no, apparently not, because there was a series of photographs.
"No, honey, you stand right there on the dog. Dog, don't bite Trig. He doesn't mean anything by it. Dog."
I wouldn't save till more on Monday, would it? A story like that would be just sort of washed away down the Moran drain. In an inundation of Morans by Monday, right? And yeah, I mean, it's just a little, but it just strikes me as somehow emblematic that her handler, because you know she doesn't, she's above doing any of this herself. You know, her handler took care of it, and you know, tweeted it out there. You know, turn every stumbling block into a stepping stone, even if it's a dog and you have to stand on him. Oh, God. Oh, wait a minute. Early cowbell for Randy. It's supposed to be jumped over the lazy dog, not stood on it! And I'm sure little Trig meant nothing by it. This is just about, you know, that pathetic, ever helpless, hopeless, publicity-seeking, yeah. Of course, there were defenses of the half-term, half-wit governor.
Trig is a great problem solver. And to all you haters out there spewing your venom, this is a little boy with his dog who is doing nothing wrong.
Except the standing on the dog part. Bless them, Labrador Retrievers are a wonderful breed. And they will put up with a bunch. Including, I suppose, having six-year-olds stand on them. Probably never even cried. Happy New Year, dog. May you just stay out of the way and not be trampled by the Wasilla Snopeses. Then again, I don't think they were in Alaska, were they? They're probably in Arizona. Oh, it's warmer down here, right? Decent little evening here, not particularly cold. Gonna be, though. God, if you're anywhere near the central Appalachia, lock down and look out come middle of the week. we're looking for a low temperature Wednesday and snow, a low temperature Wednesday of one. Feels kind of Sesame Street-y. What's the temperature, Kermit?
One.
One what? Not one. And when it gets that cold, it's like not having walls. So what else? Oh, hey, thank you, Gordon. Thank you very kindly. Gordon just doubled his contribution, and we have only $90 to go now to finish out Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Yay. So hopefully a few more folks will jump in and stand with Peter and Albert and Kate and Gordon. And thanks again to Reinhardt for the Have the Show on Me. What else? I got several here. Okay, so we did her. Let's jump over because it's always, you know, Friday's kind of lighthearted, isn't it? And it's early in the new year, and maybe it's hard to say. We'll be rocking and rolling in no time flat. But maybe just clear out a little bit of the silliness and meanness and whatnot. Give me a sec. Had a note from Gordon who helped out a minute ago saying, just sent a small contribution. No, it wasn't small. Still can't figure out how to listen to you except archives or podcast or whatever at White Rose. So I'm taking care of that. Engaging dead air I'm producing right now. But I want to, you know, we're full service radio operation. I want to help. But anyway, having dealt with the stupid, let's go over to Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. I mentioned a little bit ago I mentioned, in the last couple of days that I expected Pope Francis's remarks regarding climate change to drive them part and parcel crazy, the right wing. I just had a call in on the Gizmo line, and I need to make sure that it wouldn't kick over to the Bluetooth gizmo, so we need to redo that so that everybody can participate. Anyway, I'd mentioned a few days ago that his remarks on the climate would drive people, and by people I mean wingnuts, birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, right around the bend.
And it has. It's begun.
Now, Pope Francis will address the UN, and he's going to call for an ecumenical approach to climate change. And along the way, I think he's probably going to say some rather unpleasant, factually based things about capitalism. So, enter Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Yeah. Let's go to the audio, shall we? It is, after all, it's a
special report.
Well, one thing we learned early on about Pope Francis, meanwhile, is the new boss is definitely not the same as the old boss. Next year, the pontiff's focus will be on change, not his own, but climate change. Correspondent Doug McElway has that story tonight.
Having briefly worked as a barroom bouncer when he was young, Pope Francis is no stranger to arguments. Now, he has a big one on his hands, reportedly preparing an encyclical, a letter to bishops for next year, that calls on Catholics to fight climate change. It's already proving deeply divisive.
The world is in trouble with climate change. The scientists have spoken, the Vatican and the U.S. bishops have accepted that science, and now we need to begin to act.
To pick a contentious scientific issue, which even now, going on, almost two decades of no global warming, going on sea ice recovering, going on sea level rise, actually decelerating on every metric from polar bears on down, the global warming narrative has weakened. And to now have a pope jump on that bandwagon.
See, here's the problem. That's a guy named, and I kid you not, because the goddess of irony never sleeps, Mark Morano. Really.
Morano.
Right. That's Mark Morano. Who declares that, the science is weakening on climate change, never mentioning the fact that the only place that the science on climate change is weakening is in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for brains. The piece itself is hosted by, Doug McElway, or McElway, who, because of his relentless attacks on people who would like to have a planet fit for humans to live on over at ABC, got his ass sacked. And of course, when that happens, you pack up your desk in your little cardboard box, and you get escorted out of the building, and you walk across the street, and Rupert Murdoch is waiting right there for you.
Hi, how you doing, mate? Hi, good. Come on into facts. We got a place right waiting for you. Crikey, you gonna love it.
And so he settled right in. Mm-hmm. And then Mark Morano. Oh, God, I love her. It's never too early in a new year to offer up praise. I'm going to sacrifice a whoopee cushion or a rubber chicken or something to the goddess of irony. Mark Morano from Climate Depot. There's been no global warming for two decades. Never mind the fact that 2014 will go down as the warmest year on record for the human species, but that's not that's not global warming. No, hell no.
And now we need to begin to act.
To pick a contentious scientific issue, which even now, going on, almost two decades of no global warming, going on sea ice recovering, going on sea level rise, actually decelerating on every metric from polar bears on down, the global warming narrative has weakened. And
from polar bears on down, polar bears everywhere.
Nope. You can't swing an iron skillet around. Polar bears. There's more polar bears everywhere. Look, over there, polar bear. Where? There. Bear? There, castle. There, bear.
Now have a pope jump on that bandwagon would sow confusion, I think, among Catholics.
The climate encyclical is only the latest of the pope's controversies. He won the president's praise for helping to broker this month's contentious Cuba reset.
The contentious Cuba reset. Doug McElwain, do you mean the abandoning of a stupid policy that has been stupid for about 50 years and the reopening of nothing more than diplomatic relations with a country that's 90 miles from our frontier and would seem to make a little sense to do? Yeah, by contentious, he means that community of old right-wing cranks in South Florida are hooting and hollering about it. This is the equivalent of having 10,000 people on one side of the street saying no, or saying, you know, yay, and having the other, 12 old cranks in the tricorn hats with muskets on the other side saying, "Hail Mahu!" Contentious. Yeah. Oh, no, I did not know that, Ron. Ron and Raleigh with a note on Mark Morano. Hey, Bob. You know who used to have this douche carrier on his program on a nearly weekly basis? I think this guy's at least a canoe, don't you, Ron? He's just another right-winger on the grift. P.S. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, Ron. I had no idea you know who had this Yahoo on his... I'll be damned. Is there no right-winger that can't get a gig? I mean, can't get a... Well, Henny Youngman, he never got a dinner. Well, you can get one there.
Polar bears on down, the global warming narrative has weakened. And to now have a pope jump on that bandwagon would sow confusion, I think, among Catholics.
Because Catholics are easily confused, right? It would sow confusion, yes. And that's all, and see, that's all climate change is. It's a bandwagon. I mean, the storms aren't stronger. No. The temperatures aren't hotter. No. The fluctuations in weather patterns aren't weirder. No, that's contentious. Right, yeah.
The climate encyclical is only the latest of the Pope's controversies. He won the president's praise for helping to broker this month's contentious Cuba reset.
I want to thank His Holiness Pope Francis, whose moral example shows us the importance of pursuing the world as it should be, rather than simply settling for the world as it is.
Okay, so this is a thing on climate change. Why do you dump that one in our White House, you know, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, with a deep-seated hatred of white people and anti-colonialist tendencies? Why do you drop a clip of him talking about Cuba in the middle of a report about the Pope and climate change? Well, you do that as a dog whistle. Hey, wait, Marvelline, there's the usurper, and he's liking on the Pope again. I guess that Pope's probably into... He's probably a Kenyan Muslim Islamo-fascist, too, don't you reckon, Marvelline? Emery, did you take your medicine this morning? Well, hell yeah, Marvelline, I done! Good, Emery, good. This is called guilt by editing, not guilt by association. Note coming in from marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan. At least Sarah Palin didn't strap the dog to the roof of the family car and then claim that the arrangement was a way to give the dog wings to soar over obstacles. Come to think of it, I never heard Bishop Willard Mitt's excuse for that horrific arrangement. This treatment of dogs might be metaphoric of how Sarah and Mitt think that the rest of us should be treated, i.e. stepped on, strapped down, and on it goes. These people should be in charge of flipping burgers, much less a public service. Oh, no, Diane. You go to the burger joint where Godzilla from Wasilla and Bishop Willard are flipping burgers. If they're flipping the burgers, I'm a freaking hardcore razor's edge vegan, okay?
Bishop Willard might bless your food or rub it on his sacred underwear or something.
Now, Trig, stop picking your nose and come over here and patty out another burger for Mama.
Yeah, there went the post-show dinner.
Hey, well, but it's only fair, Diane, because after all, I do it to so many people so often.
Turnabout is indeed fair play. Back to Doug McElway.
He's shaken up doctrine in other areas, calling for moderation in the church's view of divorce and of gays. He has attacked what he calls the cult of money and unchecked capitalism. U.S. Cardinal Raymond Burke said in October that under Pope Francis, the church is now like a ship without a rudder. Retired Cardinal Francis George of Chicago has said of the Pope's controversial statements, quote, "Does he not realize the repercussions?" One theologian believes the Pope relishes the fight.
In this, Pope Francis is not afraid. He's making huge bets. And for now, he's winning. So we'll see what the future will bring.
If the Pope goes through with this encyclical, he'll be aligning himself with some church enemies, a few environmental extremists who favor widespread population control and wealth redistribution, an alignment that may test the faith of some Catholics. Ed?
Doug McElway in Washington. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, Doug, you're a piece of work. What a piece of work man is, said Miranda. He'll be aligning himself with population control, radical environmentalists. It wouldn't break my heart if the church might acknowledge that there might be a few too many humans on the planet, that the population we presently have is unsustainable in the long term. But then again, I don't see that happening, because that's only... It's like I said the other night, back Christmas Eve, I guess it was. I like the fact that this Pope is making some attempts, and to expect him to come out and just address every single one of the church's problems all at once and say all is fixed, that's like expecting Helen Keller to get her hand wet and suddenly proclaim the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock instead of simply saying water. Long way to go. We need the ordination. We, like I'm a Catholic, which I ain't. But I think the ordination of women would be a good thing. Acknowledging the availability of condoms. How about acknowledging that women aren't second-class citizens? Those are all things that could go. Imagine the really, because there's some out there, and we've seen them in the news over the last couple of years. There's some good nuns out there. They'd make great parish priests. Oh, but no, sin of Eve and all of that. Let's get rid of monogamy, so maybe less predator priests will feel the urge to rape little boys. Oh, okay, I misread. Thank you for the correction, Diane. Speaking of Bishop Willard and Sarah, she said these people shouldn't be in charge of flipping burgers, much less public service. Okay, so I don't have to, yeah. Thank you for pointing that out. I read things cold on the fly sometimes, and it gets me in trouble. Now, dadgummit, this is making me crazy. What? I got a caller on the gizmo line. And it is not connecting to Bluetooth. Hey, thank you very much to Horst. Horst got us started in the new year. We now have only $40 to go in matching funds to qualify for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. That is a big deal. Thank you very, very much. Horst is there month in and month out, and it is a big, big help. life of me, I can't figure out why this why the Bluetooth isn't. Okay, let's turn this off and start it over again. I want this thing working. And we're on. And button. And click. Okay, so maybe it'll work. I don't know. Hope it does. All right, what else? And again, Sparky has the breadcrumbs and bat signal out for Friday on the front porch. If you want to join in, Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk on Skype. Good group in the chat room this evening. You're welcome to jump right in if you feel so inclined. It's free. It's easy. Head on radionetwork.com and just click chat room. Good evening, News Ninja. Oh, no, that's not. No, that's Carol Abel. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, Doctor Who. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Kathy and Labor Man. Labor Man providing a big help in the end of the year there. Thank you. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. Good evening, Stockton Larry and Texas T and Tim and Will from Chicago, all with us for this Friday on the front porch. I hope we will have a merry group in the offing. About 13 minutes before the hour. What else? You know that a part of the ongoing protests regarding the deaths of people, Eric Garner, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, you know that a significant portion or some portion of the protests have involved a protest concept called die-ins, where people lay down and don't move as a show of protest solidarity with those who were made to lie down and not move by virtue of having been forcibly ejected from this planet by virtue of having had the universe end for them. You know, the universe ends. Never mind. Well, enter Gun Owners of America head lunatic Larry Pratt talking with some misanthrope by the name of Stan Solomon. He's got some program where they just talk about hateful right-wing things, I guess because they get off on it. So the two got to talking about the protests against innocent non-criminal human beings being summarily executed by the police, and the fact that Stan Solomon and Larry Pratt of Gun Goobers of America, by God, don't like it. When people protest the police killing people for no apparent good reason. If the Pope Francis thing wasn't, and if Little Trig standing on Dog and Sarah Palin being proud of him for standing on Dog wasn't, this is, at base level, your first hockey puck warning for the evening. Use the good duct tape. Really.
Here's my recommendation. And Larry will not condone this. The next time there's a die-in, make sure they're dead.
Ooh. Granted, this freak is apparently, he does a better Alex Jones. He does a better Alex Jones than I do in Alex Jones. The next time there's a die-in, make sure they're dead.
No, this guy wants to see people killed. It apparently turns him on. Holy Jeebus.
No, I didn't edit that. I didn't make it up. No, I didn't. That's for real. Stan Solomon wants those Second Amendment remedy, freedom, patriot, bagger, booger eater, deather, birther, tenther, birchers to go out there and protect us from the nonviolent protesters. Yeah, our buddy the Angry Indian points out, yeah, Stan Solomon's a freak. He's been saying nonsense like that for some time. The problem is, though, there are thousands of Americans to whom this guy is not a freak. They hear him say kill protesters, and they, yeah, that's right, Marveline. Next time they want to do a die-in, we just go right down, put one in the head and two in the heart, and that'll fix that protest right away. And then, of course, they say the Pledge of Allegiance, and yeah. Mm-hmm. Because fascism.
Here's my recommendation, and Larry will not condone this. The next time there's a die-in, make sure they're dead. Next time they block the road, run their asses over. I think it'll slow down. Larry, now tell me where I'm wrong.
This ought to be interesting. This is Larry Pratt, who thinks that the NRA are a bunch of pansy left-wing commie sissy liberals.
Well, it's a very confrontational mentality that we're dealing with. And at some point, the police are going to have to come to the conclusion that it's us or them. And if they continue as aggressors, I'm sorry. I think the cops want to go home at night, kind of like other people that go to work at the beginning of the day. And if they're going to have to deal with an enemy terrain, where a lot of people, and they can't sort out ahead of time who's the enemy and who is not, then I think that's going to lead to the conclusion that I'm not going in there. It's like in England and in Scandinavia, and I guess in Paris and a lot of Europe, perhaps in a lot of their metropolitan areas.
Sissy countries.
The Muslims have come to a preponderant population in those areas.
How did Muslims get into this? You get the idea that Larry Pratt's going to go and watch the movie Selma in a dirty old raincoat, and he's going to think the good part of the movie is when people are getting the stuffing beaten out of them for trying to walk across a bridge and go secure their rights to vote? Because I do. White people. And I'm about as white as you can get, but, you know, white people. What are they, really? What are we so scared of? I mean, I kind of deliberately didn't mention it, but there's that story of the lady up in Idaho, Stan, and Jesus, it doesn't get any more horrible than this. Heartrending, heartbreaking. So it was the day after Christmas. And for Christmas, And the woman is a nuclear scientist, or as Dim Leader would have said back during the Reign of Error, a nuclear scientist. The woman's a nuclear scientist, and they're gun people. She comes from a gun family. She's married a gun guy. She got a gun daddy. They're a gun family, right? Yeah. And so the youngins have Wally World gift cards, and the day after Christmas, well, okay, so for Christmas, hubby buys her a special concealed carry freedom protecting Second Amendment patriot purse. Right?
Because that's what you, I mean, it had a zipper and everything where you put your concealed carry, Wolverines! Freedom Protector. Right? Because she'd been a carrying a Freedom Protector there in godforsaken Idaho for quite some time, because you never know when one of those people is just going to pop out of the Idaho wilderness, or maybe Indians or something, and come after your freedom! Right? So you got to have your Freedom Protector. Unfortunately, this woman also chose to breed. Some of the youngins had Walmart gift cards, and she had a two-year-old in the buggy next to her purse that had the gun in it in the special hard-to-reach Freedom Protecting gun compartment. And she turned to pick up something off the shelf, check a price, look at, I don't know, maybe she was looking at a little article of clothing for the little two-year-old fella. And in the meantime, the little two-year-old did what two-year-olds are very, very good at. The two-year-old reached in mommy's purse, saw a zipper, unzipped the zipper, pulled out mommy's Freedom Protector, and blew mommy's brains out. And yes, that's a horrifying, sickening, heartbreaking story. I said so on the front end. What was this woman terrified enough of to take a loaded firearm to Walmart with her two-year-old? I mean, really, I don't think the Shawnee were going to come out of the woods and steal her two-year-old and take it away and initiate it into the tribe and make it take baths and things. See, that happened here when where I lived was the frontier. Lots of stories about that. What's interesting, though, is that in a lot of cases, the white folks would run away to the native populations and learn to bathe and live a pretty good life with a lot longer life expectancy than what was happening among the illiterate white folks. Okay? Yeah. One of them was a child of Laura Ingalls. Not Laura Ingalls Wilder. Not Little House on the Prairie, Big Woods, Big Sod, whatever. No, Laura Ingalls. When they started encroaching on native lands and started stealing lands from the local indigenous population, the indigenous population responded by raiding them and taking some of their people away. The white folks called it kidnapping, never recognizing the irony of the fact that there were all kinds of kidnapped people all over this little old countryside by then. Yeah. But in many cases, and in the case of one of Laura Ingalls' children, now she escaped, she was eventually taken, and she escaped, and found her way back, eventually, to white civilization. And they eventually brought back one of her children, who as quick as he could turned around and went back to the natives, where life was good. Yeah. But it's been a couple of centuries, maybe three, since any of that sort of thing went down. And I don't think that, I don't think this woman's kid was going to be stolen, no. In fact, I think probably her two-year-old blowing her brains out was the most violent thing that had happened in that Walmart in a very, very long time. And what just knocked my socks off out of it, and I was discussing this a little bit with our buddy John John from Australia. The dead mommy's daddy
or father-in-law said, they're painting Veronica as irresponsible, and that is not the case. I brought my son up around guns, and he has extensive experience shooting it. And Veronica had had handgun classes. They're both licensed to carry, and this wasn't just some purse she had thrown her gun into. Hunting, being outdoors, and being with her son was what made her happiest. That was her friend Rhonda. And in one of the stories I read about this, one of the family members said, she took every precaution. Well, no, she didn't. Sure, she put her Freedom Protector in her Freedom Protector pocket of her zipper and pulled the zipper in her Freedom Protector purse, designed for concealed carry so you can protect freedom. Wolverines! But there's one precaution she didn't take. She didn't leave the gun at home. Because, see, nothing was going to happen to her at Walmart. Nothing was going to happen to her on the way to Walmart. That's proven by the fact that she made it there. The odds are very low that anything was going to happen to her on the way home from Walmart. Nothing was going to happen to her when she got home from Walmart. She liked small town country living. And you know what? I don't care if she was carrying a .45 caliber or one of those .50 caliber Desert Eagles. If a grizzly come up out of the woods, that pistol wasn't going to be a hell of a lot of help. And in the news story, there's a remark from the daddy who says that his 2-year-old son is having a very, very hard time of it. And I think we can probably all well imagine the reality of that. He said, my son is terrible. He has this is the grandfather of the little boy. He has a 2-year-old boy right now who doesn't know where his mom is, and he's going to have to explain why his mom isn't coming home. And then later on in life, as he questions it more, he'll again have to explain what happened, so we'll have to relive this several times over. And yet they didn't have to live it at all, not even once, not even the first time. Had this woman not been infected by the horrible paranoia that has been foisted upon this country by people like Larry Pratt and Stan Solomon.
I want them dead. If they're blocking traffic, run over them. Yeah, that'll keep them from doing it.
And fears of Muslims and fears of the other. Because if you do not have a legitimate need for a firearm, you ought not carry one, especially with little ones around. We are, in fact, we as a species are known as Homo sapiens sapiens. We are primates. We are curious and we are clever. That's why you baby-proof a house. That's why for electrical outlets that don't have anything plugged into them, you put those little blanks in them so baby won't go up and stick a fork in it. Because babies are clever. Toddlers are clever. And they're clever enough to work a zipper. And, wow, what kind of hair trigger was on that pistol that baby was able to squeeze it? Unfortunately, in stories like that, we're left wanting in detail. We're left wanting for things like, was it a revolver or was it a semi-automatic? You see, revolvers generally, I think I'm safe saying generally, don't have safeties. And because it's a revolver, unless you intentionally leave the chamber blank, that's got, or you know, no, it's A semi-automatic handgun, on the other hand, can have a clip in it, but a round not in the chamber, so that if you want to fire it, you have to chamber it. Or at the very least, you have one in the chamber and the safety on, if it's got a safety. If it's a Glock, a very, very popular handgun, well, a Glock holds a lot of rounds, 15 9mm rounds, 17, 19 9mm rounds. We don't know what firearm it was. It would have been nice. It would be nice. The 2-year-old not only had to unzip the pouch, the 2-year-old had to retrieve the firearm. Then the 2-year-old had to make the firearm fire. That means it was either a revolver or it was a semi-automatic with one in the chamber, and that means that the baby either had to work the safety and then pull the trigger, or that it was, in fact, a firearm without a safety, or a Glock that has that little second, that quality, you pull that, and it's attached to the trigger, and that supposedly serves as the safety. And the 2-year-old, as Grandpa notes, is going to relive this. Want to bet they raise him to be a Second Amendment gun-toting patriot, too? In all of life, we are only the blink of an eye, every last one of us, from death. Usually it doesn't happen. But, you make it more likely that it will when you carry a firearm. People who carry firearms are dramatically more likely to be involved in firearms violence. And that's just a fact. And my heart breaks for that little 2-year-old, because someday he's going to be a 10-year-old. And a 12-year-old. And a 14-year-old. And it is going to be brutally hard to explain. Daddy, why did I kill Mommy? Can you even begin to comprehend, A, ever hearing that question, and B, even remotely trying to attempt it? Because see, when a little one says, Daddy, why did I kill Mommy? You can't look at the 2-year-old and just shrug your shoulders and say, Wolverine! because it's a bullshit answer. Well, son, you killed mommy because mommy carried a gun to Walmart because mommy was afraid of her entire world. But mommy wasn't afraid of you. Mommy loved you. God almighty. What a horrible, horrible that a child doesn't have a mother, and horrible that a child is going to... I don't think with a psychiatry degree, a PhD in psychology and social work, and a PhD in theology, I don't think I could come up with the way you explain to that child how this happened. I don't. So it's 11 minutes past the hour, and again, we have $40 to go on the matching challenge for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very kindly to Horst and Kate and Peter and Albert. Thank you very much, and Gordon, for your help. I'm sure they'd all love some company. If you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, fire up your Skype. And or send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc on Skype. We'll take a little break and fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. You're listening to Conversation Radio, the very first edition of it for this brand new year, 2015. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blow and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I found. No one changed my mind but Mama tried. One and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, Mama seemed to know what lay in store. Out of all my Sunday learning, for the bad I kept on turning, and Mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without a parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Yes, my mama had a love. She tried so very hard to tell his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right. Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. that he's only me to blame, 'cause mama tried.
And 15 minutes past the hour, a quarter past, almost to the halfway point of tonight's Friday on the Front Porch. Got a little round table. We could probably make a card table with it, use a card table for it this evening, at least to start with. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
I'm fine. Had a wonderful time. Well, my stepson's still here visiting. We had meatloaf for dinner last night.
Yummy.
Crock-pot meatloaf with mashed potatoes and salad.
Oh, it sounds good. Well, just a technical note for anybody trying to get through on the gizmo line. I'm having fits with it right now. This is probably a little too much inside baseball. But the gizmo line works via Bluetooth. And the Bluetooth shows that it's paired, it's connected, and yet it won't, I can't get it to go to Bluetooth. So I'm going to keep at it while we're talking, and hopefully we'll get the gizmo line functioning. I'm not blowing anybody off or refusing to take any calls. I just can't get it to work right now. So I wanted to make sure folks knew that. Good evening, Carol Abel from Australia.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm sweating again.
Break my heart.
I know. I wish I could send some of it up there. But no, it's a beautiful day here in Australia, and I wish everybody the happiest of New Year's. I hope it's a good year for all of us. We just have to keep our eyes open.
Yeah, be alert. Don't take any wooden nickels. Yeah, because
you're... Try to be aware when people are lying to you. I mean, it's a talent that we can all work on acquiring.
Well, exactly. And you're three days into 2015, right?
Yeah, it's January 3rd. My, how the year slips by.
Yeah, Saturday, no less.
Yeah, it's Saturday where nothing happens in Australia except people going to the beach. We don't get mail delivery on Saturday, you know.
Wow. Of course, I'm not so sure that's a terrible thing.
Well, as long as they can keep the union intact and have the other 5 days work for them, they're not as close to closing the post offices or privatizing them here as they are in the States. But it's really crappy what's going on in the States with trying to get rid of a functioning bureaucracy that has worked beautifully for how many years now and is actually in the Constitution.
And let me jump over here. Good evening, Gerald.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Doing well.
I know, instead of home delivery here, they're going to make us go to them big boxes.
Well, I can't. We get parcels and stuff, small stuff, but any kind of a large box, I got to drive down to the post office. Mm-hmm. I won't even leave on the porch.
You know what I'm talking about. It's got a whole bunch of little individual mailboxes on it.
Right. Yeah, a cluster.
Yeah. You get a package, they got a big box on there, and the postman puts a key in your little box.
Oh, that's a whole new world to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's way high tech for West Virginia, Stan.
Yeah, I just go down and look at my postmaster and say, I got a package.
You got a box for me?
And she said, yeah, I got you box.
They deliver them here to the house, so I don't have much trouble.
Not us. Yeah, see, for the longest time, we were, and I'd never,
yeah, but
you know,
you live out of sticks.
In other parts of the country, most people in the U.S. have heard of rural route, you know, so you'd have RR12, box 16. I'd never heard of it until we came here, and I moved out into the world, you know, the world 5 miles past civilization. We were for the longest time, we were HC, for instance.
Highway contract.
Really. Highway yeah. contract, yeah. We were HC81 box, I can't even remember.
And yeah, I think they put those out to bid or something.
Exactly, they, exactly. They, yeah. they free market.
Yeah, we had, yeah, freedom, free market capitalism.
Right.
Yeah, we had that in a place I used to live.
We had that here when my parents first bought this house.
Well, I have a real postman, you know.
We didn't have street numbers then.
Here, you know, the guy in the mail truck, actual mail truck, brings our mail.
Ours is a guy in an old rundown, his own old rundown personal pickup truck.
Yeah, but like I said, you live out in the sticks, so. I'm just kidding, Bob.
No, I know, I know.
We got one of them white mail trucks that comes around.
Well, see, actually, down in town they've got those too. Or had, maybe they don't anymore.
Ours is pretty reliable. He's here anywhere between 11 and 1 every day. Don't have any trouble.
Whether you need it or not.
Whether I need it or not. Bills just keep coming.
Yeah, they do. Mondays are always.
Well, you know.
It's always late.
Yeah, Mondays. And it seems like Saturdays he's here early. Maybe he wants to get it done so he can go home. I don't know.
This guy has a relief driver on Saturdays.
I can tell when we have a substitute, I guess is what you'd call him, because some of my mail ends up in my neighbor's box.
Yeah, well, this gal takes over for him sometimes when he goes on vacation or something, and she'll get the mail here lots earlier than he does.
Oh, I was gonna make a little technical announcement, by the way. I had mentioned previously that the reason the rerun stream wasn't running was because we were running on our emergency backup wireless cellular internet that's really fast but really expensive. We finally got the main line fixed, and just shortly before airtime, I talked to the technician that comes is really, really, really a good, smart guy, and we talk football too, which makes it extra funny. We were talking; it was yesterday, and he said, "I'm done with Holgorsen. I'm just done." I said, "That's me. I'm right there with you." Talking about the head coach of the Mountaineers, I told him, because it's been since Sunday night that I've been reporting this problem, and he says, "God, those guys on the phone don't know beans when the bag's open." I said, "Well, they told me there was a cut line somewhere down the way." He said, "There's no cut lines." He said, "Your modem's gone south." I said, "Okay." And so he dropped me off a new modem. I fired it up. Working great. Just beautiful.
Yeah, I'm on the cable here, and when it first came in, I guess they were overwhelmed with orders and had contractors installing it. So I call and say, "Hey, you know, I want this new," I think it was like 512K or something like that, which was extremely fast back then. So I can't remember, Baker Telecommunications or somebody like that, you know, just a contractor. And, I don't know where they got this guy, but... he shows up and I said, "Yeah, the computer's in here. I'm out in the garage, but I had a brother-in-law stop by." And I said, "Yeah, if you need anything, I'll be out here. Just give me a yell." Well, he gets all this stuff hooked up and he comes out and he says, "Have you had trouble with that monitor or anything?" And I had an old, you know, CRT monitor at that time. I said, "No, it's, you know, it was on." He said, "Wow." He said, "But I moved it around to run the wire and it went off." I said, okay, let me look at it. So I come in here. The damn thing's unplugged in the back. This guy's a technician. I mean, it's, you know, just kind of a story I thought I'd share. Really not that funny, but... anyway.
No, I...
Well, I mean, it was unplugged. You know,
right. Well, and but I mean, see, there's a million, for every time there's been a substantial problem with the actual technology. There's at least an equal one that's a matter of PEBCAC, you know. Problem exists between keyboard and chair.
Yeah.
To wit, yeah. Me. Yeah.
Well, I was kind of relate. It was fairly simple, you know. Wasn't hard to fix, but, you know.
Well, but that's the thing. It took the home office nearly a week to figure out, and they never did figure it out. They're probably sitting there still thinking that that a squirrel's gnawed through one of the electric internet cable lines.
Right.
Meanwhile, I have a new modem sitting here blinking merrily away, and you know, problem solved.
Yay. You know, I've worked out of town a few times with a guy with this company, and he's if he doesn't get stellar service from chain restaurants, he's upset. Doesn't want a tip. I'm like, dude, would you be highly motivated for minimum wage? I mean, really think about that for a minute. He said, well, yeah, you know, you're right. So, you know, those guys probably aren't making a lot of money. So I always try to factor that into my when I'm not happy with the service. Maybe it's just me.
Sorry, I'm dealing with folks trying to reach the gizmo line, and I rebooted, and I just want to see if maybe it works now.
I'm just trying to keep the show going.
I appreciate it. I truly do. Had a note coming in. Had a note coming in from Kate a little bit ago during the break. Subject line: other collateral damage. And
howdy.
In regard to the story out of Idaho of the woman with the gun.
Yeah.
And Kate wrote, "I just can't resist. No one of the workers in blue vests at that Walmart." And I was reminded of this when you mentioned motivation and minimum wage. No one of the workers in blue vests get paid enough to respond to the call, clean up in aisle 4. She said, this story made me cry when I heard it last week. And what other rational response is it to us? And frankly, you know, I don't mind saying it. You know, if that punk-ass thug Patrick Lynch of the Police Benevolent Association in New York can say that Mayor de Blasio has blood on his hands because he simply said that he's had to explain to his son how to interact with police and to interact courteously and respectfully and never give them cause to kill him. If that's blood on the mayor's hands for a madman who went and blew away two police officers, then I got no problem whatsoever saying that there are absolute quarts of it just dripping all over people like
Wayne LaPierre
and Larry Pratt and all of these gun goobers. I got no problem with that whatsoever because it's true. I want to check in here. I'm just looking at who we've got in the room. We got you, Gerald. We got Sparky. We got Larry. We got Todd and Kath, and we got Carol Abel in Australia. Tell me, what are the circumstances? And maybe this applies closest to home to you, Gerald. You and I share the hillbilly wonderland where everybody got a gun. What are the circumstances? But I mean, everybody's welcome to participate in this inquiry. What are the circumstances whereby you would feel the need to look at your significant other, if you're male, to look at your wife? If you're straight, look at your wife and say, "Honey, don't forget to take your deadly weapon in the special deadly weapon purse I brought you." Or if you're looking at a guy, "Baby, don't forget to strap on a pistol like it's goddamn Dodge City in 1870. What are the circumstances in 2015 that would make you do that when the sentence you said before that was, "We're out of milk and bread and diapers. Will you please go to the store?"
I don't know, Bob. I've never said
hey, I can't find my key. I found my keys. Where's my gun? I guess the thing I would like to, what situation could I be put in if I were armed in the public, that I would be able to react to? If you've got your arms full of groceries and some guy comes up behind you with a gun and says, give me your wallet and your phone, are you going to go for your pistol and take one in the back? I mean, really, what are you going to do? He's got the drop on you, Tex. And I would imagine that most encounters are like that. Now, I don't know. I've never been in that situation. I don't feel that I live in such a dangerous society that I have to be armed every time I leave my home.
Well, take for instance the incident in Las Vegas where the Freedom Protectors, who were fresh from Bundyville, went and decided to take out some police. Now, in that particular instance, there was a gun-carrying Freedom Protector who was going to try to take down the obvious shooter. Well, when the Freedom Protector pulled out his Freedom Protector, the second one, the woman, am I remembering this correctly, pulled out her Freedom Protector and killed the first Freedom Protector who was going to kill her murdering buddy. So it's precisely as you described it, Gerald.
I'm not trained, I get emails and stuff all the time. I see this stuff on what you're going to go front sight. That's one of them I've seen. They train you to be tactical weapons training and all this. Where in the hell are you going to use that practically? I mean, really? I mean, you've got a concealed weapon, which means that it's not really easily accessible, right? I mean, it's not on your hip. You can't draw it fast. I mean, you can probably draw it reasonably fast, but like I say, if some guy's behind you and says, give me your money, and sticks a gun barrel in your back, what are you going to do? Really, what are you going to do?
Well, exactly, because, see, it's not Jack Palance and Shane. Pick up the gun.
Well,
he's not going to throw a six-shooter down in front of me. Pick up the gun.
Right.
Pick up the gun.
There's not going to be a dialogue like in the movies. It doesn't happen like that.
No, and under the best of circumstances, the only thing a sidearm does for you is if the other guy shoots first and misses, and you get a chance to turn, take cover, and then return fire.
Well, I don't know why you would want to kill anyone over property anyway. I mean, that just makes no sense to me.
Bob, I know that the topic is about guns, but I was listening to my economist friend Richard Wolff yesterday, and he was talking about the fact that the median wealth of the society has gone down about $50,000 over the last 7 years, but the disparity between the white folks that have wealth and African Americans and Latinos and other minorities that have wealth, has the disparity has even been greater between the whites and minority people. And he was saying that was going to be a recipe for the kind of thing that we see in Ferguson right now. And it doesn't appear that the government or that the people who elect people in the government.
Yeah, but I've even got a problem with that, Larry, because the people who are aggrieved are not the people who are carrying the guns. The people who are aggrieved are the paranoid people who are afraid that the aggrieved people are going to come after them, even though there's no evidence of it.
Yes, I understand that. Yes. I do understand that. You were talking about, when I first came on the call, you were talking about the fact that the mayor has explained to his son about how to deal with the police courteously, and for some reason, the police are angry that he was trying to protect his son. Maybe I missed something, but I'm upset with people now that want to give you know, that want to give quarter to the police, to the police's perspective on this, and to try to be an apologist for the police and the difficult job that they have to do. That frustrates me, and I have to deal with that particular political perspective or point of view in my head as well when I'm trying to explain that I think that there's, you know, far too much police brutality and far too much, you know, that the police are upholding the social and economic structures of the wealthy at this point. Okay, fine. Why don't you go on?
Okay.
Can I say what I'm saying?
Yes, Sparky, go.
You know, the thing I see that was they got with the mayor is, one, number one, he's a liberal, and number two, he married a black woman.
Right, and he's got kids who look like his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the thing a lot of people don't, Bob and I could relate, because, I mean, this is a gun society. You know what it takes to get a concealed weapons permit here? Make application with your sheriff's office. It's like $125. A couple months. If you don't have a criminal background, you're good to go. And you can pack a pistol on your hip and just go to town. Carry it anywhere you want to, except like courthouses and you know, state and federal property, things like that, schools. So, you know, and everybody's got one because it's published in the paper once a week or every other week or something like that. I don't remember now, but you know, it's easy to get, and it's not like it's something hard to do, because this became a shall issue state. You know, and what that term equates to is the county must find a reason not to issue one.
Right.
If you meet the minimum
baseline standards, a concealed carry permit shall issue. There is no discretion on the part of the issuing agency once those minimum standards have been met. You're absolutely right, Gerald.
You know,
and that's something that the GOA, which Larry Pratt and the NRA have pushed for the past two decades, and it's gone nationwide, because now West Virginia, and I don't mean, I'm trying not to harp on, you know, stay in West Virginia here, but it kind of relates to the rest of the country. I think it reciprocates with Florida, Ohio, Virginia. I mean, a lot of states reciprocate, which means if I have a concealed weapons permit from West Virginia, then I can carry a concealed weapon in another state that I don't even live in. Now, does that make sense to you people?
Yeah. You know, but
see, full faith and credit. You know, the gun goobers are forever hollering about full faith and credit. But what's interesting is these are the same gun goobers who, if you say, well, okay, full faith and credit, then that should apply to marriage equality too. Oh, hell no.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can make the same argument with car insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, you're insured in your home state, and you travel to the neighboring state. I see that's what the argument they're trying to make, but, you know, that's a little different. Well, actually, it's a lot different.
You know, Gerald and Dunk and Bob and everyone, they say, you know, there's a big talk in economic terms about guns versus butter. And what people will say is that every, you know, the investment in guns takes away from the butter. From, you know, from social services. Why, you know, and it's on a small, you know, people care more about having a gun than they care about whether or not they have food in their bellies.
Well, and there's a lot of truth to that, yeah.
I just don't get it. You know, they need to have clothes, they need to have food in their bellies. They don't need at a house and all that stuff. Not a gun.
Right, and see, we've got a note from Kim in L.A. who says, you've heard of Watts, Compton, South Central, East L.A.? I live in East L.A., Tim says, and I have no desire to carry a firearm, concealed or open carry. As a matter of fact, my parents or even I would go to these neighborhoods to go shopping. You know, there were white people protesting with black folks at night in Watts near the deadly housing projects during the Black Lives Matter protests, and they weren't thinking about bringing firearms. Gee, Is carrying firearms needed to protect oneself from bears and moose and other wild animals? Because the white folks from the northern part of L.A. protesting in South L.A. didn't carry, nor were they worried about black folks killing them, so carrying must be a precaution against lions and tigers and bears. Oh, right.
Well, it is a pretty exclusive club. I mean, it is mostly white people that have concealed carry permits. Because it's not a cheap process. It's not overly expensive, but it's not cheap. Here's my thing. Just look at the liability you set yourself up for. Like, someone had posted on one of the Facebook pages, some guy got shot or killed by a stray bullet that was randomly fired in the air or something. I don't remember the exact story. Watching fireworks. I mean, he just dropped dead. Nobody knew why. And they found a bullet in him.
There's several news stories online of people getting hit by bullets for New Year's Eve.
Yeah, well, and I've got one out of the Houston area. Guy has folks over for New Year's Eve, walks out to the curb to watch the fireworks, and without anybody hearing anything, or just all of a sudden the guy drops
dead.
That's
the one. Yeah, that's the one.
With a bullet wound to his head it came out of the sky, just, you know, because some idiot is out there celebrating the new year by shooting off his gun, you know. Wolverines, right, you know?
Drunk redneck.
You know, if somebody wants to shoot off a pistol or wants to shoot off a gun, if they have to do it, and I don't think anybody has to do it because it's dangerous for everybody, but if they absolutely need to do it, let them go to some desert place or some rural area where people are not living there or where there aren't any animals living or where, you know, you don't have to worry about whether or not your environment is going to be despoiled. You don't need to do it in an urban area where you've got people around. Sorry.
Well, you're just talking about a gun range where that's where everybody goes to shoot. I mean, that's what we do around here. Well, some of us do, anyway.
We cleaned out a drawer that we haven't looked in my mom and dad's bedroom because it was blocked. Had a whole bunch of shotgun shells, 22 bullets, and we found one firecracker in there. And we'll set it off for New Year's Eve.
But the thing that just dropped it, no, bad word. The thing that stunned me about the story out of Houston, and I posted it to my Facebook page, is that the statute that criminalizes shooting guns up in the air says that you may be prosecuted for a felony or a misdemeanor.
If they ever figure out who did it.
Right.
Yeah, that must have been where I saw it, probably on your Facebook page. But look,
or a misdemeanor. See, we've got a statute. I don't know if it's been changed. I doubt if it has. We've got a statute in West Virginia that relates to hunting season. And it says something like, if a hunter negligently shoots and wounds or kills a human being or other animal. Because, see, people who don't hunt don't know, or mostly don't know, I would imagine. But, okay, so for instance, deer season, you got so many people who are so twitchy in the woods, and Gerald, you can probably attest to this.
Yeah, buck fever.
Buck fever. Buck fever. You shoot at anything that moves. You shoot at rustling bushes, and it got so bad that, I mean, that's when the hunter's safety blaze orange, you know, so many square inches required, because, you know, like I said the other night, there's a big difference between a 12 gauge number 4 shot blast at 150 yards. It'll pepper you up and hurt like hell, but you probably won't die. But at that same range or even greater, a .30-06 round, a .30-caliber round, or a .27-caliber round from a .270, or a 7mm round from a 7mm mag, or a .708, you're dead. You're just about dead anywhere you get hit, which goes back to the note that we had from Paul from Parts Unknown about going hiking. And so you got to wear blaze orange during deer season. On the other hand, spring gobbler season, turkey season, the way you turkey hunt in spring gobbler season is to camo up so that you completely disappear into your surroundings. And among other things, I mean, you never wear so much as a speck of red. Or blue, even. You don't wear color. Because dumbasses will shoot at that. And in West Virginia, we also allow, during spring gobbler season, the use of rifles and shotguns. We've even got bizarre hybrid weapons that's a 12-gauge shotgun on the bottom and a like a 223 on top. Or vice versa.
Combination gun, I think, is how the statute or how the regulations refer to it. Combination gun.
And you can have people murdered in cold blood in turkey season in this state. And the most the killer will ever face, I mean, they won't even do prison time, you know, Department of Corrections, penitentiary. No. If convicted, the most they'll do is a year in the county jail and up to $1,000 fine.
And most of them don't even do that. Yeah, come April, I think it's in April, middle of April, there will be half a dozen to a dozen people killed during spring gobbler season. Mm-hmm. Happens every year.
And if you were to actually research those and find out how many of them were, as we say, a-romping with somebody else's spouse, gets interesting real quick. I mean, it got so bad. I mentioned our beloved Labrador Retriever Miranda. Back in the day, we had a blaze orange vest for her. And she was an inside dog.
Not a bad idea.
We had a blaze orange vest for her. She was a yellow lab. She didn't look anything like a deer. But we kept that blaze orange vest on her throughout the pendency of deer season, because lest some ignorant neck with buck fever decide that he was gonna take down my, that's kind of short for a deer. Better kill it just to be sure. Might be a doe. You got a doe tag? I got a doe tag. Yeah, it's a doe tag, not a dog tag. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned getting, at one time, some friends of mine who lived in a county close to you, Bob, said, hey, first day of squirrel season comes in, whenever, September, I think. You want to go? Go with us? Yeah, I'll go. So go out to the woods. I have my trusty shotgun on my shoulder, and there's people every 20 feet. And about every 5 minutes, you hear a gunshot. And then you hear buckshot falling through the leaves around you. And they thought it was funny. I thought, I think I'm going to go now. And that's a true story. I was out there about 30 minutes. I said, I think I'm going to go home.
Yeah, because you get to where you feel like you're the one being hunted.
Well, they're just shooting shotguns up in the air, and, the shots just falling all through the woods. And
the squirrels are in a holler tree somewhere laughing.
Oh, yeah, there wouldn't want to be seen for miles. But, that's the kind of people you have.
Well, there's an old joke about what to take with you into the woods. Anytime you're going hunting, going into the woods, going hiking or anything, you should always take a deck of cards. Because if you get lost, the first thing you do is you sit down somewhere and you deal a hand of solitaire. And about 15 to 20 seconds later, somebody will walk up and say, play the red three.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'm not anti-gun. I mean,
no, I'm not even anti-hunting, but there's a lot of idiots out there.
Yeah, but just to go out, just to be able to, like the woman in Idaho. I mean, can you imagine? Just think for a minute. Can you imagine getting that call from the police department? I mean, I can't. I can't imagine that.
I was 7 years old when I took that call.
What do we
see? I didn't know that.
What do we out here in the Western United States who are liberals need to understand. You mentioned once that, you know, that people from the South that have live in a gun culture just don't, the people out here just don't get. They think that we're crazy out here because we don't understand why they need to have their gun. So what is it that we need to understand? You know, about
you're talking city dwellers.
Yeah.
Up here we have a gun culture.
Yeah, and Idaho, where this woman lived, she was out the gazoo in gun culture to the point that she was such a great white hunter that she felt like she needed to have a gun in her purse in case she ever had to go hunting Negroes. Because see, that's why. Look, let's just get down to the bottom line with this. White people carry concealed weapons because Negroes. Not because black folks have done anything, but because there is an abiding paranoia that lives and is transmitted generation to generation in white folks, especially ignorant white folks. Larry, the question you asked, I'll try to answer to a certain extent. A lot of the people back here in Appalachia are they're like me. You know, they're nine generations in these hills. Okay, and so there's a certain cultural memory that attaches to that. There's a lot of people here, I would say, well, relatively a lot of people here, who have 100-year-old shotguns. Or who have multi-great grandpappy's squirrel rifle that he went to fight the war between the states with. Goddamn South is just peppered with those. An old great grandpappy's saber. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm making a mistake here. Hey, Jim, we got Jim on the Gizmo line. What's up?
How are you?
Well, I think we all are.
Good. Greetings to all of you. A happy new year.
Happy New Year to you, and welcome to the Gizmo Line and the Friday group.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
I've got a story for you when you finish your conversation about guns.
Well, I think we pretty much solved it. I mean, I think Larry understood.
The only thing I would say about that was I don't know what the father of the child, the husband, thinks. But I'm going to guess, just from living around the culture, he probably doesn't think there's anything wrong with what happened. It's just an unfortunate accident, and, you know, it happens all the time. That's my guess.
My stepson now owns my dad's shotguns, and he's got his grandfather's shotguns, and he's got shotguns to go back to 1800, I think.
Well, yeah, heritage being stuff. Friday on the
14th. Mm-hmm. Hey, Todd.
This being Friday on the front porch to maybe lighten things up a little bit. You know, this did happen in Idaho, and it's not that far of a stretch between attack of the killer tomatoes and attack of the killer potatoes. So it's always good to be armed in Idaho.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and Idaho might as well, given the right-wing Earth or Death or Tenth or Booger Eater constituency that it is, Idaho might as well be right next to Alabama.
Because the crime rate is high, right? Is the reason?
Remember what happened. And remember what happened here in Ohio, though. We had one of those enhanced people actually take a BB gun off the shelf and, you know...
And got murdered in cold blood by the police for it, yeah.
Right, and you never know when you're going to have to protect yourself from a BB gun, you know, wielding person who just wanted to take it to the checkout and buy it, but you never know.
Right, or Tamir Rice, who, somebody took the orange tip off of his pistol. not of you know his BB pistol or toy pistol or whatever it was. Not that I think that in 2 seconds time, which is exactly how much time was spent before the police officer killed Tamir Rice in cold blood, not that I think he would have noticed in 2 seconds time that orange tip and not fired.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, what was up with that? Go ahead, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I have a solution for some of it. I have a Beretta that my father got in the war, and believe you me, it still works quite fine. But another thing I have, and it's something that I play with my cats with, and it's a pocket laser. Size of a chapstick.
Oh, yeah, and yes, a cat will chase a laser.
And it will point or paint a target or put a red dot on anything that comes outside your house. And someone was out there messing around, and I said, let me try this. And so I got the little laser out, and when they saw that red dot, they took off.
Yeah.
Because they thought they were being painted as a target, because it gives the same exact same dot.
Yeah, lasers is lasers.
Yeah, I get the hell out of there, too.
And they left. They certainly did. And as a backup weapon, I have a flare pistol. So if they want to get past one and the other, well, we'll go to round three, and we're going to really light them up for the last roundup. And, of course, I've got plate glass windows on my patio that are made of Lexan.
They'll have a hard time getting through that.
That's what I thought, but, you know, it's never, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Just as I say to a lot of some of the things that I hear on the radio, an ounce of prevention is, an ounce of pretension is worth a pound of manure.
Well, I had someone tell me one time, who was into the gun culture, the concealed carry and all that. It's probably true. Sounds about right. Regardless of the moral implications, if you shoot someone who attacks you, you know, if it's a justifiable shoot, I guess would be what you would call it, prepare to spend at least $10,000 to stay out of jail. You know, regardless of whether it was a rightful shoot or not. And, you know, I don't have $10,000 laying around, and it'd be kind of hard to come by. And, you know, I'm not saying that no one should defend themselves, but, you know, probably a lot of the altercations could be avoided, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's de-escalation is an art.
Of course it is. But if you've got a gun on your hip, you know, all of a sudden you're a badass. You're not going to take this guy's shit because he you know, said something cross to you. I mean, look at the shooting in the theater in Florida down there. You know, the guy threw popcorn on the other guy over a text message, and the guy's dead. So you see how fast it can escalate from just an argument to somebody dying. I mean,
it's permanent.
I mean, you don't come back from that.
See, Bob, the fight or flight, that it's hard to get rid of the fight or flight instant when you're in a position where your buttons are pushed. Is that what you're saying? De-escalation is an art.
Exactly. Larry.
Well, de-escalation is a learned skill. It has to be studied. Some people aren't interested in it. But my God, I had I got a story here out of Massachusetts. A woman got mad at her husband because he didn't buy her a Christmas gift. And And as a consequence, her husband killed her.
He killed her over that?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff happens all the time. I mean, let that sink in for a minute.
Meanwhile, there's a bizarre...
When you have a gun...
There's a bizarre investigation underway in Peachtree City, Georgia, where the chief of police blew his wife away a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't read the article.
At 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
What was that over, anyway? I haven't read the story.
Well, nobody knows, because they've clamped down the information on it based on everything I've seen, and all you get is authorities are investigating.
Well, the only guy I saw, he was moving the gun in the bed or something, and it went off.
Oh, for sake.
It doesn't make any sense, but that's the last I heard.
Twice?
A gun.
No, it was only
bed.
No, that's one thing they did correct today. He shot her once, not twice.
Oh, okay.
May I ask, you can see, who would sleep with a weapon in their bed?
Are you kidding, Jim?
It goes on all the time.
I mean, I can see on the night table, or I can see one beneath the mattress, but not in the bed.
Under the pillow, Jim.
Well,
I kid you not.
That's still
now,
a man.
Now, in the Massachusetts case, it should be noted that the man did not shoot his wife. First, he tried to strangle her to death. Then he stabbed her to death.
Well, I guess if one means does not succeed, try another. My God.
And but it gets weirder. So after he's killed his wife, he decides that to save the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts the cost of a trial, sticks a towel in his exhaust pipe of his car and can't kill himself. So then after he doesn't kill himself by putting a towel in the exhaust pipe of his car, he pulls the towel out of the exhaust pipe, drives to the Waltham Police Department, walks in, and says, "Shoot me! I have nothing to live for. I just killed my wife." So the Waltham, Massachusetts Police Department then shot him with a beanbag gun and took him into custody.
What a Moran. He can't even...
Meanwhile, the little boy was asleep in his bed.
So the child
gets to do it to somebody else, but doesn't have the guts to do it to himself.
So the child now is an orphan because of the stupidity of help.
Ian, speaking of guns, we got a news update here. I see just coming across the scanner in western Kentucky. Kentucky State Police and Lyon County Sheriff's responding to shots fired, and a guy's girlfriend says he plans to have a shootout with police.
Well, see, there you go. You're in the same region. This is not just isolated. I think that's the point.
Well, no. The region is Merca.
Right. I mean, that was what I was going to say. This is not just isolated to Appalachia or...
It's
nationwide.
Here's the weirdest one yet, though. A couple of Texans, father and son, drive across country and kill an elderly... this is what's been put together so far. Kill an elderly... this is within the last couple of days. Kill an elderly couple in North Carolina... Tarp up their bodies, and then drive up the highway and wind up in Lewisburg, West Virginia, where they decide to shoot it out with the cops. Not kidding.
Yeah, that's a true story.
The cops stop one vehicle, and... in the second vehicle, if I got this right, Gerald, he ambushes the cops.
The only thing I know is they got one of them and obviously beat the hell out of him because they had his mugshot and his eyes were all swelled shut. And he'd always had a rough time. I'm not real sure. I had to work today, so I haven't,
I mean, 2015's getting starting out plenty weird. I know a lot of people said
Lewisburg is not a big town either.
No, Lewisburg is a quiet little artsy fartsy tourist town. I mean, there's a lot of money in Lewisburg.
Is that where is that where the Greenbrier, wherever Carnegie Hall and Greenbrier School for Women used to be, Lewisburg?
Yeah, that's where the Greenbrier is.
The Greenbrier Resort is close. It's not
In Lewisburg. It's in White Sulphur Springs.
Yeah, it's just right up the road. It's not very far.
But it just seems that instead of adopting policies and behavioral procedures that will go in a more pacifist or a more rational direction from my point of view, things seem to be getting a lot worse in terms of the government and the way in which the society is dealing with a lot of the economic distress. That's number one. And not only are they making it more difficult, themselves, but they're making it difficult on those of us who would like to believe in a positive or in a more liberal way of dealing with. I mean, the Republicans are forcing everybody to become Republicans. I don't know we're living in a fear state. In a state that perpetuates the idea of fear, and that people have to live in fear, and maybe I'm projecting my own internal state right now, but nobody can relax anymore.
But I could jump in. What makes you think that you could relax, honestly?
Well, thank you, Angry.
The one thing that I wanted to say on the gun thing, and I'll leave it alone for now, I'm going to stop. The NRA, the GAO, Larry Pratt and all that, have Obama's anti-gun and all that. And I hear that shit all the time here. Bob probably does too. Going to take our guns. President Obama has been a boon to the gun industry. Because of fear, the fear from the right, the NRA and all that. The AR-15s and all that can't keep them on shelves. For the first 3 or 4 years of his presidency, literally gun dealers could not keep them on the shelves. So who have you not heard from on Obama being anti-gun and all that? The gun manufacturers.
They haven't been heard from because they're entirely too busy cashing the checks.
You're damn right. I mean, he has a boon to the gun industry. That was by design or accident.
But let's be fair. It's nothing specific to Barack Obama. Any dark-skinned president would have sufficed.
Of course it would.
I mean, had it been Jesse Jackson, the sales would have probably doubled or trebled or quadrupled from what they already did.
Yeah, but, Cuomo just passed away here recently, and if he had won, it would have been the same thing. He's going to take our guns. It's a partisan progressive issue that they're going to hang on to, like abortion. Even though Reagan's daughter had an abortion, nobody said a goddamn word. The Bush family used to support abortion. I can prove it. I have the actual goddamn documents.
Oh, yeah. Bush was, given awards by Planned Parenthood of Connecticut?
Yeah, because he was helping them raise money.
Right.
I have the document.
Yeah.
A copy of it anyway,
Getting back to the gun thing, Barack Obama was the one that signed the legislation that allows people to carry guns in the backcountry of national parks.
Bingo.
Which Bush would never sign.
No.
I wouldn't bring that up, but you're right.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. Again, we're talking about Reagan and Bush. NAFTA and GATT couldn't get through under them. And then here comes big dog Bill Clinton, right? Bubba came through. Oh, well, he's playing the saxophone on Arsenio Hall's show, and he got caught, with some women, Jennifer Flowers, and all these women are hyping about this, and he smoked a little weed, and, You know, he hangs out. Yeah, I can hang with him. He won't screw me. He's a Democrat. He won't screw me. And he came up with the new crime bill, the Ominous Crime Act, right? Which put more people of color in prison than anybody. I mean, Nixon did a hell of a lot coming up with SWAT and what have you, and that was to destroy the Black Power movement. That was the whole point of that.
Well, and we do a disservice if we don't mention Nelson Rockefeller introducing the concept of a war on drugs in New York State when he was governor.
Yeah, but who? Yeah,
and
but
Nixon opened China.
Yeah, but what would Nelson Rockefeller's connections in the intelligence community, right, for him to even come up with that in the first place? You know, and then when you start looking into narcotics, you start looking into intelligence, and you start looking at how drugs like crack got distributed in the communities that, in which it was distributed, and how that money was related to Iran-Contra, how that money was related to unofficial war in South America. The ghetto is connected to all of this. You know, and yeah, you know, we need to be talking about poverty because a lot of these discussions, you know, we talk about violence as if it's a bad gene. That, you know, people can sit in poverty, sit in these hovels, not have anything, be disrespected, growing up watching your father be disrespected by police like I did, watching your mother get fucked up by white men, like a lot of, you know, that didn't happen to me personally, but I watched this. And I'm talking about my particular experience in this country.
And yet, angry, these two cats that just recently pulled this stunt in West Virginia, do I have to mention that they were white?
Well, look, right after
and into the bargain, they're pill freaks. The daddy, 54-year-old Edward Campbell, has a rap sheet as long as your arm and your leg together. They came from Texas to North Carolina. They burnt, I mean, these are Snopeses. They burnt the house down, stole the car, murdered the two people, took their bodies, and yeah, when the one car that was reported stolen in North Carolina gets pulled over by the cop, the daddy pulls in behind in the red pickup truck and walks up and opens fire on the two police officers do I have to say they didn't have it coming? They were acting in protection of the public good, and they were in fact wearing bulletproof vests, and they both survived, and they're out of the hospital, they're okay, and I'm grateful for that because they were doing the job that we want police to do. They were either interdicting crime or preventing another one, and these two assholes go and do that, you know. Where'd they get the gun?
Well, you know the answer to that.
I didn't mean to interrupt, but you know, that's one question. Where did they get the gun? And, you know, the one thing that the NRA and all those, Wayne LaPierre, what they say is true is criminals will be able to get guns. Of course they're going to be able to. The black market exists, always has existed, always will exist within a capitalist state where you have shortages. Yeah, they're going to get them. But just like that freak who shot those two men who were sitting in, shot those two officers who were sitting there, not doing anything, right? We're still hearing about that. Just the same day in Florida, a white guy, you know, racist, right? Shot a cop, ran into a pole. They got him. They didn't kill him. They might have smacked him a couple of times, but he's going to make it to the courtroom. And we're not even hearing about that case. Gerard and Amanda Miller, we're not hearing about that too much. The majority of officers who have been harmed by white supremacists, far-right extremists, who listen to Glenn Beck, who listen to David Duke, who has the
right... Who listen to Stan Solomon, who listen to Hannity, Stan who Solomon. Listen to O'Reilly. Yeah, look, these two dudes in West Virginia, you know, they killed two people, burned a house, stole a car... And opened fire on two police who didn't even have their weapons drawn. Okay? Now the boy, the 21-year-old boy, got the living piss beat out of him somewhere between the arrest scene and, you know, I'm sure he just fell down a lot. Between the arrest scene and magistrate court where he was booked. But these two white maniacs are alive as you and me.
Well, you know, the question is, how, where do they get the gun? Bob, you probably get the same publication down your way. It's for, here I can go down to the local store, pay, I think it's $1.45 for it's called an ad bulletin. And I'll guarantee you there are at least 100 ads in there for used firearms.
Sure.
Anybody, I mean, it's individuals.
Lowell Mountain Trader. Legal.
Yeah, all I got to do is call a guy and say, hey, you know, you've got that pistol. I'd like to buy it. Where you at? And I go down there, give him the money. I've got the gun. No background check, nothing.
Yep.
And it's perfectly legal.
Or, you know, any given weekend, you know, there's a gun show somewhere. And remember, the NRA had a hissy just last year and stopped an attempt to close the gun show loophole, which, you know,
right.
if you don't know what the gun show loophole is, if you can, if you have a pulse and you can by some method, manner, or means propel yourself and said pulse and have the money in hand into a gun show, you can buy anything you want. Black, you know, and, which I mentioned, Angry, because black market, schmack market. We don't need a black market in firearms.
No, you don't. No. But the reason I'm saying that is, no, I'm pointing that out is, the material is being produced, capitalism being capitalism, somebody is going to find a way to market it, get it out, it's going to be used. You have systems, not just capitalism, but I mean, yeah, we all talk about capitalism, but systems of greed and systems of profit and systems of exploitation that require a certain level of violence. So these things are going to be used. You also have people that are going to try to protect themselves from that violence. So they will be sought. But what we're really not talking about is, you know, or it's how to put this. Well, where we're really not going, I should say, with the discussion is, okay, we got the gun. So what? Guns have always been in this country. It's part of the culture. Always has been. Probably always will be. We know why. This is a colonialist state. We know how it was built. We know about the genocides and the slavery. Done. Yeah. We know about this. Point is, why at this particular time are we having this particular issue? Yeah, it's Obama, but if it wasn't Obama, it would have been somebody else. If it had been a white male like de Blasio who was taking his particular politics and his own family experience to say, you know what, we really have a problem here. That's all he said. He's still supporting the cops. He's still going to say anybody who has ever done anything to a police officer deserves to go down. But the bottom line is he was talking about reality. White males in this country who have always felt an unearned sense of privilege and power have now had that questioned, even though it is really not even being questioned. Black people, for the most part, and I'm speaking about blacks as opposed to natives because there's a different agenda, and that needs to be pointed out, have only asked to be assimilated. Very few of us have really talked about going separate, mostly because we haven't been free enough to even think about it like that. We speak English willingly, even though we may not speak it well. Like most Americans, we speak it willingly. We, you know, go to the churches. We dress like everybody else for the most part. We do everything. Been in every goddamn war, right or wrong. We do everything. We are part of the torture that's going on in this country.
Yep.
So,
I have a question for the angry Indian.
Okay, we got a question. Yes, Jim. Sorry. And then I want to hear from Kathy because she's been trying to talk.
Sorry.
Yeah, Jim.
This deals with the Skull and Bone Society up in Yale. And I heard this, or I saw this documentary about the Skull and Bones and the theft of Geronimo's corpse. Now, Prescott Bush was stationed at Fort Leonard Wood, and he has been given credit for having stolen the bones of Geronimo, as well as the femur and other grave goods from that particular grave site. And it was Prescott Bush who was the one who went out and exhumed the bones of Geronimo. And, of course, they tried to put some other type of skull of a 10-year-old boy to explain that. And the skull was not matched. And, of course, since then, their lawyers have refused to comment. Have you heard that, Angry?
Yeah, I mean, I know the story, and I know that his descendants have tried to get the bones back. Basically, the Bush family and the Skull and Bone Society as represented at Yale, told the family to fuck off. And that's pretty much where it is. They don't deny it. They don't confirm it. The Bush family doesn't deny it. They don't confirm it. You know, as far as the family's concerned, for Geronimo in his descendants, they want the, you know, just like every other, you know, remains of our people, we want them back. We want them put back where they were left so they could rest. But exactly. That's about as far as it goes. I mean, I'm not into the whole Alex Jones thing about that because that's really, and Rents.com, that's really where I see a lot of that. Because when I ask a lot, I'm not talking about you, Jim, but when I ask a lot of people who will bring up these sorts of things to me about, you know, Skull and Bones and what have you and their relationship to abusing natives, when I bring up the Udane McCain Act and how, you know, they were pushing indigenous Dene people in Northern California so that they could put nuclear waste on their territory, I mean, these are a lot of people who still don't even speak English, you know, that no one wants to talk about that. You know, or the real language in terms of what's going on in South Dakota and what have you with the Black Hills. So, now I'm not saying it's not an important issue. It's an issue of disrespect. But if we're going to get on Skull and Bones about that, we really need to get on every museum in this country that has, you know, Native artifacts that should be put back when we haven't even had a discussion in terms of respect for us being here.
And you know what, Angry, that's a point well made because I think back a million years ago to when I was a young archaeology student, and in the, you know, we were digging, and there were even ethical debates taking place among the dig crew while we were digging. But the laboratory of the archaeological site had kind of a warehouse, and the warehouse was chock full of Native artifacts of unknown provenance. It was stuff that had just been given to state government over the centuries in Tennessee and had eventually been kind of just sort of shuffled into this new museum complex down in southwest Tennessee, not too far among other folks from our good friend Granny T in Tennessee. And I remember just walking through there stunned. There was a red soapstone pipe, hand-carved, And all that was known was that some natives had presented it to some representative of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and it had filtered its way down to down into this museum. And nobody knew how old it was. There was no context. There was no provenance. And it was full of that kind of stuff. I remember seeing a bend in the Tennessee River, and one of these days, you know, it's on the. I have a very strange bucket list. But one of these days, I can still remember how to get there. There was a sandy bend in the Tennessee River, where there were whole pots just eroding out of the sand. And of course, being good archaeologists, nobody touched them. But you know, the one guy showed it to us and said, you know, this stuff is all over the place because there were millions of people here. And none of this is being protected. And he said, 20 years' time, there'll be some sort of gated community development here, and these things will be sitting on wealthy people's mantelpieces or behind glass somewhere.
But think about what you just said, and think about what Jim just asked me, and we can bring this right back into what we're talking about. Now, you have there's two I can give, but I'll bring up Africa for right now because that's the one that most people don't know about. Great Zimbabwe, which became Rhodesia for a period and then went back to Zimbabwe. Now, I know Bob knows about this. I mean, there's huge megalithic structures there, castles, what have you, walled cities, right? They ran an empire system. They were brutal, so they built what the types of systems usually do. You build a main structure that intimidates everybody in his vision. And that's where you do most of your terror and what have you. That's where the power lies. So they did the same thing in Great Zimbabwe. And when, you know, Rhodes and the rest of these people found this, they didn't let anybody know about it. And the white, you know, government that was in knew about this, collated all of this data, put it all in storerooms, and never let anybody talk about it. It was officially a state secret until the Mugabe government came in. Now, why am I bringing this up? Because it's just like what the Israelis are doing. They purposely build settlements on top of Palestinian grave sites. they remove towns, remove the entire thing, raise it as much as possible, and put modern stuff on to erase what was there. Now, in some cases, there are people who think that they're doing a little individual bit for the white race and God when they hide this sort of information. And others just casually, well, you know, it's better if we don't talk about it, we don't discuss it. Because like I said, Bob, it shows civilization, right? It shows millions of people who were doing something before Europeans got here.
So right, right. It's a form of retroactive genocide. Let me interrupt here to make sure, because I want everybody to be heard from. Kathy, please. Kathy. Are you there, Kathy? Todd? Oh, okay. Kathy says her mic isn't working. I'm sorry. I want to make sure, like I said, I want to make sure everybody's heard from. Horst, good evening.
How you doing, Bob?
Any thoughts going down this road?
I had thoughts earlier, but the conversation's kind of moved on, and now I'm not really. I don't remember what it was I was thinking anyway. So at this point, I'm just trying to kind of keep up. I got an eye on some other stuff over here anyway. If I get something, I'll try to jump in. I'm not really very good at that either, but I'll do what I can.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we weren't excluding anybody. Good evening, Roger. Who may be working and just listening. Let me take a minute here at 27 minutes past the hour. We got about 30 minutes worth of conversation left in this Friday on the front porch. We are still where we were. We got $40 to go to finish the matching challenge for Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you very much to Shirley, who's there at the beginning of every month with a $150 challenge. Shirley will match up to $150 coming in. And thanks to Horst and Kate and Peter and Albert and Gordon, we're only $40 away. Thank you very, very kindly. If anybody, 4 at 10, 2 at 20, 8 at 5, you know, like that. Okay, so back into the conversation. I'm sorry I interrupted it that way, but I had seen that that Kathy was trying to talk, and I just wanted to make sure that we didn't miss out on any input from anyone who wanted to offer it. I would like to go back just because I find this story so gruesomely fascinating. The West Virginia thing. You know me. I'm kind of a fact nerd. And there's a little paragraph, and this is the story out of the Charleston Gazette. These two white assholes that tried to shoot it out with the police in West Virginia, down near Lewisburg. They were actually out on the interstate, which is I-64, bearing east toward Lexington, Virginia, where it meets up with I-81.
Anyway, when did this happen, Bob?
This is day before yesterday.
When now? I'm sorry.
Day before yesterday.
Day before yesterday, New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, let me double check that.
Hello.
Oh, there's Kathy. It happened Thursday. I'm sorry.
There's Kathy.
Yeah, there's Kathy. It happened. I'll finish this up and then come to you, Kathy. It happened Thursday, Jim. But here's one of the things that kind of grabs me out as far as legal process is concerned. Last September, suspect Edward Campbell, 54 years old, was arrested on a charge of aggravated assault. Okay, assault is a misdemeanor. Aggravated assault is often a felony. Arrested on a charge of aggravated assault, according to court records in whenever I try to say a county name in Texas, I inevitably screw it up, so I apologize. According to court records in Brazoria or Brazoria County, south of Houston, here's the grabber. Court officials could provide no other details Friday. They said his case file had been sealed. And I hate statements like that because that leaves us speculating. Why was it sealed? Now, here's a guy with a long criminal history who is apparently not in jail, who has an aggravated assault charge that's not even 6 months old, who's laying a trail of terror from Texas to North Carolina, including murder and arson and grand larceny and a shootout in West Virginia, and the aggravated assault charge is sealed. Do we think that that might be Texas is notorious for being harsh, having a harsh criminal justice system. Why is the case filed sealed? It happened in September. Why was this guy able to be in North Carolina and murder and arson and theft and West Virginia and a shootout? And Rick Perry, you got some splaining to do. That sucker runs for president. I'm not going to forget. I'm bookmarking this story. I'm sorry, Kathy. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to say hello to everybody. I had something to say earlier, but we're off track, and I'm kind of lost track. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say we can always backtrack.
Backtrack. Let's go forward. That was kind of a joke, you know. New year forward.
Right. Exactly.
Have a nice new year.
You know, it probably goes back to the whole gun thing. About the availability in this country, and it's not just West Virginia. I mean, it's all over the country that way. And the one thing I wanted to say, and I'll shut up about this, and Bob has even confirmed this, the gun thing is not going away, ever. I mean, just forget about it. It's not going to change. It's here. It's the way it is. So you know, we're going to have to learn to deal with it the way it is. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. We're just going to keep on sacrificing the babies and families and right.
I mean that's the way I understand it. I mean, the Supreme Court ruled on it twice, and you know it's not going away.
But Bob, when is the society going to stop the call to become critically aware the way in which we are a this is a colonized. You know, when are we going to turn around colonization in a society and understand the nature in which the Republicans and the conservatives have moved us backwards, they have moved us forwards? But the whole thing is we have to understand that this is a colonial society, and the institutions have been here and perpetuated by white domination from you know, time in memoriam, and people need to understand the concept of white privilege. And we need to fight back against this, because I think living in this culture the last 35 years or so, that the Republicans and conservatives have completely recolonized people's brains. They really have. And You know, unless people come together and fight back against it, and if they keep on letting the institutions develop in the way that they are, and they don't fight back, then it's, you know, because what they're doing by sitting around and saying, well, everything, you know, nothing's wrong, there's no problem here, they're just perpetuating the same old, colonization nonsense. And as long, even though I may not individually be a racist myself or be a sexist myself, because I live in a society that perpetuates this kind of behavior, then I'm complicit in what's going on. Understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I do. And anybody, take a run at it.
Well, one thing we know, language. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, somebody's
no,
echoing
us. I'm hearing an echo now.
Check. Anybody?
You're on, Bob.
I was going to maybe try to take a run at that, but
okay.
If anybody's got something to say, though, I'd like to hear it.
What I was going to say is that the language is really being confused, and we really need to understand what racism means as a word, what it really denotes, and what ethnic bigotry and bias is, because it's not the same thing. Racism denotes a system. You know, we live in a sex system. Doesn't necessarily mean that as an individual, cotton on to it, that you agree with it. You like the German in Nazi Germany that didn't go along with things, but you still had to go to work. You had to pay your bills. You had to maintain yourself, but you didn't go along with it. But you still, and so on from the system. As males, we have certain privileges. We're watching this be, explained by the whole idea that politicians can say legitimate rape and your entire political party can back them on this, and they're still in power. They still get respect. So, it exists. So, racism is a system. Racism exists in Tibet. Racism exists in Thailand, Malaysia. Where you have people who are of Chinese descent that have more privilege, have more economic power because of that privilege. They have more military power, police power because of these privileges. Because when they came in themselves, they came in with money, as invaders and as colonialists. So, we have to get, past the black and white and really understand, what racism is and the purpose that it serves and be able to separate that from ethnic bias. You really shouldn't beat yourself up. And a lot of white people who are really, in a very reactionary sense, you're angry with me, you're coming at me, because they know that they identify with the system. Because when I was saying, I was talking about earlier, if you have somebody who can do in offices and be like Clive Bundy and Hit Crew and pull, guns on federal officials and so on, nobody's screaming about that. But somebody black does something insane that wasn't planned, that was just insane, because this was a violent son of a bitch. And, we got to start, that war with the entire black community, and that's considered justifiable. It's bad that the cops have this attitude, but we can understand this. It's white privilege. That is racism, where other white people can look at members of their own group and don't see the same threat as do from someone who was outside of the group. And this exists no matter where you go. But saying that isn't enough. I'm just saying we really need to get the language clear and really re-educate ourselves on the words that we're using, because we get caught up and say, but that person's a racist without really understanding what that means. No, that person is a bigot. They're not even conscious of their racism. And most people are not conscious of it.
But some
they
are.
They just don't think about it.
Some are.
Some are, but a lot of white people like you, Bob, if you're caught in a situation where you're standing on the street corner in D.C. with your son, you guys are on your way to a mountaintop removal meeting, and a black man is, waiting with you. Let's just say for hell of it, he's wearing a suit. Maybe he's on his way to a luncheon someplace. And the cop drives by him and doesn't like the way he looks, and you see the squad car turn around and make a U-turn. And the three of you are still walking down the road. You're not talking to each other. You just happen to be walking down the road, and they stop. Pull on the head of the three of you. Tell you and your son to step aside and start wailing on this guy. What do you do?
I'm the wrong guy to ask that.
Well, yeah, but on average, the average person in total shock, they don't know what to do. Because one, we've never discussed this. Two, the system outside of Jack Kennedy has never really put white people on the spot by saying, look, we can change all the laws here as we want to. But that doesn't change what's in somebody's heart.
Angry?
Now, yeah.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm a white woman from New York City, and when I was a little girl, my best friend was Jill Jackson, and she was my black best friend. And I have always been the same way I am now, but as a little girl version. So when we went into the bathroom one day, and there was about a whole bunch of different kids, and they came in and they started taunting her, saying bad words to her and approaching her physically, I stood right in front of her, just me, put my arms out, and I said, you are not going to touch my friend. And I said, you better all get the hell out of here. And, I cursed at them and screamed at them, and they ran away. So the thing is this, about you were talking about, we, those of us who are who we, like me, that are, compassionate, you know, loving people that don't, that aren't like these horrible racists or horrible people. And, you know, we're going to be who we are. Others might learn and change, but what do we do? You know, you're talking about changing the way we use words and the way we define things. But all in all, when it's all said and done, what can we do? How are things going to change? I think they're not, and we just got to, those of us like us, we just gotta do the best we can, educate people that can be educated a little bit better, maybe, that are sort of on the same page, but I don't see it changing.
Well, it's not going to change if the current, you know, as someone else mentioned earlier, the current, you know, economic system continues to exploit people. You know, if it continues to have a system where, you know, I come out of the ghetto, so obviously I'm not going to have the same chances like, say, Obama, who did not grow up in the ghetto, to go to Harvard. I have a pretty high IQ, but I didn't have the chances that he did. I didn't have the connections that he did. I didn't have a teacher who had enough clout to write a letter of introduction for me. I didn't have a priest that had those kinds of connections. You know, when I went to school every morning, I had to step over drug addicts. And when I came back from school, I had to, you know, get past crooks and gangs and stuff, you know, just to get to my apartment. So, you know, these are the things that we really need to be discussing and asking, well, how did the system turn out like that? You know, there's a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel, which I think Bob is aware of.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jared Diamond. That's a problematic book.
Yes.
There's a lot of books are problematic. I mean, Black Athena is problematic. It does lay some groundwork for being able to have reasonable and intelligent discussions about these things. How did we get from point A to point B? Well, let's really look at it and be objective. But, you know, if white society is going to be offensive, well, we need a white people's day because there's Black People's Day. Well, there's a Black People's Day because you've ignored Black people for so long. There's gay pride marches because you treated gay people so goddamn bad. We wouldn't feel the need to be seen if we were actually seen. You know, and the best way to actually, you know, deal with everything, let us pretend that everybody's the same. But one of the questions that comes up about that is, you know, when folks ask me as a person of color, and I'm not going to, you know, really bother right now to list my entire ethnic range, but, you know, they ask me to forget exactly who I am and become basically white. And the thing is, I don't even really have a problem with that. It's just that the idea or the concept of whiteness in the Anglophone world only exists in the Anglophone world. It doesn't mean anything outside of this colonial sphere. You know, to be frank.
So Angry, how do you get people who are defensive about looking at colorblind racism? They say, well, you know, we're not racist. We don't live in a racist society. And it's called colorblind racism. I can't remember the professor that came up with the term for the essay. And, you know, you hear Tim Wise from Tulane talking about white privilege and other people. How do you get people to look dispassionately about, you know, their white privilege in a society, and they look at it and they say, yes, that exists. I'm not going to be defensive about it. It exists. And it's been perpetuated through the social institutions that have been created by, you know, by man, and to get them to accept it, and then finally see a dominant culture understanding that it it has been making African Americans, Native Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans invisible.
I understand what everybody's asking, but see, you're asking for, like, you know, a kind of a plan or an answer that will kind of, you know, fit, and if we do this and if we stick fast to this, you know, it's bumpy, that things will work out. You know, Bob has said it many times on this show. You have to get to the root of how this has to happen and ask yourself this. If you really start teaching at grade one, they leave kindergarten and they go to grade one, you know, they're not suspended. But let's just say they tell him this. He's covered anything. In fact, he actually created a situation that has been very detrimental. And when the Vikings came, they tried to take over through violence, and we see what happened with that. It didn't work because the people fought them back. You know, to actually talk about that. Well, you know, Italians will flip out because they'll say, well, this is racism towards Italians. And then the NRA will come out and say, well, this is against everything that America's about. And Fox News will just whine because they're Fox News. And Limbaugh will say whatever the hell he's going to say. Then we get caught up in that debate about, well, you know, you're not nice and I'm nicer. The bottom line is, I know very few white people that are willing to give any land back to natives. I know very few white people, whether they're liberal or not, they're very willing to give reparations. And it's not even like a check to every black person. That's the idea of actually seriously fixing the problem, fixing the actual problem. And the actual problem was in the Kerner Report, 1968. The problem is white racism. Went back 20 years later, and they came up with the same result. It's white racism. You know, so
the only thing I can do is be me. The only thing I could do is call out things when I see it, unless I know someone's going to harm me, but call it out. If I see somebody saying something racist or horrible, I say something to their face. I try to talk to people I know that have some semblance of sanity and give them information. That, you know, give as much money as I can to this family and other Iraqi veterans against the war and ACLU. I mean, I do the best I can. There's not much more I can do.
But let me interrupt for a second. You know the answer. Just like Bob and everybody else that we're talking to right now, everybody else that's listening, you know the answer. When you see something wrong, you stand up and you say something about it. I'm not telling people to say, okay, well, you know, you will be a saint, and this is what you should do, and you should walk on water, and when you see black people being, you know, hurt and offended, you should step in and throw your life away and do that. Now, I know there are people who feel like that, and I know there are folks who try to make white people feel like that. But what I'm saying is that is not a solution to anything. There's a reason why white people are pissed off. I don't have to agree with it. I'm just saying let's identify reasons for it.
Yeah.
You see, well, no, that's the why are people flipping out?
Well, and you know, you've just looped back to the original query. Why? Because we're using her, we are using her example as a point of departure. Why does a well-educated nuclear scientist white woman in Idaho, one of the whitest states in the union, feel so terrified that she has to take a gun with her in her purse to where her kids can use their gift cards? What is it about that entire process? Where is it in that entire process? And like Kate said, let's remember the Walmart workers making minimum wage in those blue vests who were subjected to that horror and themselves will probably need counseling out of this. What is it in the world that made that woman feel that fear and make that choice?
Okay, and I want to say this real quick. Emotion. Totally emotion. She's afraid. But if you ask her what she's afraid of, I bet you she'll tell you this. I make a pretty good goddamn salary. We have a pretty goddamn nice house. My husband and I work really hard to have decent things. And I don't want some nigga or spick coming and taking my shit. That's the attitude. That's the attitude.
Before I missed the chance, I want to add one consideration to the whole calculus there. Now, in this particular case, I don't know. I didn't know there were other kids there, for instance. I mean, like, the story I've heard, I've had it presented to me because I've been pretty busy with this stuff. It's just been like a woman by herself with a 2-year-old. I didn't know there's other kids there. In general, though, I would just want to slip this in here, though. If I were a woman and I expected to be out by myself in America, I might consider carrying a weapon for personal protection because of rape, not because of black people, but because of rape, especially like in a big box store with like these huge parking lots. Stuff happens out there. Now, I don't know if I would actually do it or not. My imagination won't take me that far, but you know, that's one thing that I would, especially the way we treat rape cases, you know, and victimize the victim further, generally speaking, I think about it. I would have to. So there's just that. I mean, I've been wanting to.
And
that's a good point.
And that is a legitimate response to the question that I posed, Horst. You know, that was not a rhetorical question. What is it that makes that woman think that is a necessity for her?
Now, in this case, though, as you say, though, that she was obviously a gun enthusiast. This isn't just someone who's necessarily thinking about protection. We know, you know, Idaho has a certain reputation. I imagine, to some extent, is fairly, you know, justified in terms of, you know, white people running around with guns and racist bigoted attitudes and stuff. But in general, I would just say, like, I have to – that was one thing that popped into the story. I was like, I wonder if that was a factor. And if not in this case –
Well, let me just interject for a moment, Horst, because I think you've opened up something. Yes, the family were gun enthusiasts. Yes, the husband, the grandfather says here, I raised my boy around guns and he knows how to handle guns and they took all the precautions. Like I said, except one, not carrying a gun. But when we talk about them being gun enthusiasts, and I'm approaching this, I hope, somewhat cogently anthropologically, among the crowd of people who are gun enthusiasts, I take your point as very well made, Horst. But when we're talking about gun enthusiasts, I think we also need to take into account that carrying a firearm for these people, and I hate saying these people, but this group of people, whatever, obtains a talismanic,
yeah,
or
exactly.
Dare
yeah,
I say
you
it,
have to explain it to
totemic
me.
Quality.
Totem, yeah.
Thank
you. I just for a little bit of personal background, I think it was Joe Bajan's first book. I think it was which is the one where he talked about going to the one of the Confederate get-up things or something like that, and he's playing in the guitar circle with the people.
Yeah,
and,
that's deer hunting with Jesus. Here. And I don't necessarily agree with everything Joe says about firearms in that chapter, but he makes a very, very cogent argument, and any disagreement that I have, I think, is philosophical, not necessarily... substantive.
I was just, I grew up in that culture, that minus the Civil War stuff. But like my dad was a black powder rifle enthusiast, and we used to go to these matches two or three of these things a year. You know, since I was like 4 or 5 years old, I think I was in my first bench gun competition when I was like 5 or 6. I don't really remember that too well, but yeah, I know you don't have to explain to me like what guns mean to these particular set, because those people were there too. And, you know, we didn't get mixed up with them, and the matches we went to were not that kind of a thing. But there was stuff, you know, and, yeah. So, I know what you're talking about. I know what you're getting at. And
I think I can answer
like Bob's religion
question. I think I can answer Bob's question there, you know. Why does she think she needs to do this? it's because of the dark-skinned people. I mean, I'll just come out and say it. There's a fear there. And to answer, you know, to kind of go back with what Alex says, you know, I'm a white male in modern America, so I really can't relate. I would love to be able to, but I can't.
And you know, and I understand that. And Gerald, I said something along the same lines, but angry, you've been to Idaho. Answer this question: how big is the hood in Idaho?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, there was like maybe where a lot of the Mexican community might live, in those small little areas where they live, because they go to work where they go to work, and then they go right back where they live, you know, and they have like a couple of social places that they'll go to, and it's really limited. There's no signs, but everybody knows where you're welcome. But I have to be very honest with you, though. I was dealing with vets over there, and quite, you know, I mean, cowboys and what have you, and I didn't have a problem. There were people who looked at me, and I was walking around with a big gun, you know, and people looked at me, and, you know, they kind of had, like, well, what the hell is going on? And I went up to the mountains a couple of times, and it was obvious they hadn't seen anybody dark in a long time, but nothing happened. Nobody threatened me, none of that. I didn't hear that, and I have to say that a few people did come up to me. Usually they were vets. I have to say this. And said, if anybody ever gives you a problem, let me know. So not everybody's a fool, and that's what I want everybody to realize, that the average black person out of here who is angry, sounds like me, we don't assume, at least most of us, do not assume that every white person is our enemy. But
you have
to understand that when we're speaking from our perspective, not yours.
Can I tell an Idaho story?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm always open to hearing an Idaho story. I mean, I didn't have a bad time there, but
I have a friend that grew up in Red Bluff that moved to. You know where Orofino, Idaho is?
I can't say that.
Is that near the Snake River?
It's on the Clearwater River. It's like 40 miles out of Lewiston.
That's a little bit of a reference, but okay.
Yeah, but anyway, he moved up there to. He worked for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And he's a hunting and fishing fool. But when I went up there to visit, he worked as maintenance operations director on a fish hatchery. The Native American people, I forget, they're Nez Perce or what tribe they are, but they can go right on the where the steelhead come into the hatchery and net them, and that pissed the fishermen off to no end that they had because of their.
Yeah, because the land was theirs in the first place.
That's the only people of color that I saw up in Idaho were Native Americans.
Yeah, that's the only reason why I think I made it.
You know.
Hey guys! I hate to interrupt this, but it's time to go. I've just potted down the channels because we got to get out of here. It's been a rousing good conversation, and I thank you all. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you, Larry and Horst and Alex and Roger and Angry, and thank you, Todd and Kath, and thank you, Carol Abel. It has been a rousing good Friday on the front porch. It's been a dandy good introduction to the new year. This first edition of the Horn for 2015. We'll be back with more and Monday. Oh Lord, yes, we will be back with more and Monday. It will be the it'll be the fifth day of January. And I want to thank everyone who responded. We met Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. Thank you, Henry, for putting us over the top on that. And thank you, Horst. And thank you, Gordon. And thank you, Kate. And thank you, Peter. And thank you, Albert. And thank you, Reinhard, for helping us get January started in such good fashion. Thank you all very much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to John Fox, to Ben Birch. Thanks, Sparky, for your ongoing moderation of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina. Wrong button. It's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.